Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. Hey, I got a... It was a question or slash concern from one of my students. I'm teaching a course through University of Maryland on engineering management or reliability engineering management. And one of the discussions we had recently is I have them do case studies where they get to know a little bit about an organization, what they're currently doing reliability-wise. You know, do they use Halt? Are they doing advanced statistics or not? Are they setting goals or not? Or how do they go about doing what they do? And then from that, the task is to create some recommendations. And you've done that. You've talked to companies, and we're writing about it, right? Is you understand what they want to do. You understand their vision. You understand what their gaps are. You do an assessment, and then you make recommendations. So the basic question is, well, how do you make the right recommendations? Well, so how do you do that, Carl?
That's a very, very good question. If we just sort of follow the thread of the gap analysis, the reliability plan development that we have in our book, as you point out, you have the gap, so you know there's some deficiency somewhere.
And well, then, opportunities for improvement, Carl.
Yes, please. And so we've got the opportunities or deficiencies. And then we want to understand what types of decisions management needs to make or the project team needs to make. So I think there's some chalkboard notations before you get to the recommendations. One of the chalkboard notations is the gap. Then there's the decision. Then there's drawing from knowledge and experience and textbooks, what tools and methods support closing the gap, support making the decision. So now you got a tool or method. And then the question becomes, how do you implement that based on the maturity of the organization you have? So we have another notation, which is where the organization is in terms of its maturity.
Right.
So let's say you have a gap that relates, you don't do a very good job of fatigue testing or something. There's some type of fatigue analysis that's missing. And that's important because, say, you're in a business that fatigue mechanisms are key to achieving reliability, understanding mechanisms and making sure you don't have fatigue cracks. So now we've got a gap. So we could go right to the recommendation, say, okay, implement fatigue analysis, what have you. But better is to have some waypoints where what decisions have to be made at what point in the program, and then what type of analysis will get you there, and what type of methods will get you there, and then where's the organization on its maturity? For example, if you're a startup company and you don't have the skilled help to do a fatigue modeling, then you're going to have to use some type of introductory tasks that get you where you need to be while you develop the in-house or get a relationship with an external third party to do more complex analyses and modeling. So maturity is important. So based on the gap, based on the maturity of the organization, the decisions, and the method, I'm going to start looking at tasks, and that's the recommendations. So the recommendations are the tasks. What are you going to do specifically? Who's going to do what? So that's the way I like to do it. It's a bit methodical, but it all fits into our six-step process that we've talked about in our book, and it's better than just going from a gap to a recommendation because you want to consider those other things. That's off the top of my head, Fred.
Yeah, no, that fits perfectly. That builds the foundation for this question, because if you you know, analyze or get to know what's working or not working within an organization, you may end up with 40 gaps. And in like our last episode, we talked about prioritization, and they're only really able to address, say, three new recommendations, three changes to the way they do things. It's, say they're limited to, we only want, what are the three things we need to focus on now to move forward? And so one of them might be, we need this fatigue analysis, but is that out of the 20 potential ones, is that one of the top three?
Excellent point. So there's the subject of recommendations, then there's the subject of prioritizing. And so, because we could go, we, like you say, you could have 40 gaps and you could have a, you know, a few dozen recommendations to close the gaps, but that could overwhelm the system. The company may not have the capacity to implement all of that. So there's a prioritization that is important, some way to understand what's high, medium, low. And certainly I would start with the gaps.
Right.
Say, okay, we have this set of gaps. Some of those are critical based on our experience. Some of them are less important. So you can prioritize gaps.
I think that's the rub is, well, how do you line up the prioritization? I mean, okay. if it's central to the business being successful, right? I think that's one way to go. I think that's just one strategy to go about doing it. And another is we need to build a case for reliability as being useful. So let's pick ones that will give us, as we would say vernacular, a quick win that would demonstrate that it's useful. So if we did derating and nobody's tracking field failure problems anyway, and it's the value comes from making a more robust product so it has fewer field failures, well, it's going to take a couple of years to really recognize that in some organizations. So comparing that to the one that enables us to ship on time when we've never shipped on time in the past, right? Let's do halt and move these failures earlier in the program so we have time to solve them and reduce the risk of delaying the program. That one, the program manager and that team can see it in that program before it ships. So I think in the context, are we trying to build a case for reliability plays a role? Is where is it going to be adopted? What's the beachhead that allows us to make further progress? Is another strategy. Another strategy is which one would have the biggest bang for the buck or return on investment if they're worried about cost. That's another strategy. I think it takes another dimension, though, of just being which one's the most important. Well, important in what way?
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. So let me just brainstorm with you and with the person who brought up the question. And let's just talk about some strategies. I always like to look at prioritization of tasks company by company. So there's certainly not a one size fits all, but here's some of the criteria. For a given program, the one way to prioritize, one of the criteria is degree of new technology.
Yep.
And so that can be, you can get a metric on that. Another one is new applications and new use conditions. So we're looking for things that'll trip us up. And of course, if you have new use conditions, that's one of them.
Well, in that new category, I often describe that to people. Why is the new stuff the most dangerous, you know, or concerning? I says, well, those are the areas we know institutionally, we know the least.
Yeah.
And we can make good decisions when we have fully characterized and understand a technology. It's a new technology or new whatever. We don't have that institutional knowledge or experience to make good decisions. So there's a gap there of our understanding, our gut feel of how this works or doesn't work. And they go, oh, okay, yeah, you're right.
So, yeah, I think back to when, and I'll go on to another criteria in a minute, but just to explore that, I think back to when GM had joint agreements with Toyota for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And GM spent quite a bit of time analyzing the Toyota production system and what made it work so well. What were the positive points? One of the points about the Toyota product development system is they didn't introduce massive changes at the same time. Now, they did incremental changes to product lines. And so the Camry or whatever vehicle program they had would undergo smaller changes to improve, but not introducing wholesale new technology or new applications at the same time. Right. So they understood that incremental. You can't always do that. And so this is why if you need to introduce change, new technology, new applications, new user conditions, then that becomes a prioritization criteria. Another one is safety. And as systems get more and more complex, safety becomes higher and higher priority because things can fall at the interfaces or the integration areas. And so degree of safety implications for a particular gap can be a criteria.
I don't think that's another criteria. I think that's always a criteria, to be clear about.
Very good. Yeah, great point. That's always there, and it needs to be always there. But it can be examined. If you have a list of 40 gaps, you can say, okay, these 7 of them have safety implications that we're concerned about. Well, that's a prioritization technique. Another one, since we live in the world of economics, is cost. And so you could have 40 gaps, and maybe one of them costs you nothing and takes very little time, because time is another criteria.
Yep.
Well, okay, so let's go ahead and do something about it. It's almost a no-brainer. And then there are other criteria, and we can brainstorm them as to what the other criteria are.
Well, part of it is, and I mentioned it earlier, is time to market risk. Consumer products are often driven by it has to be on the shelf for the holiday season or for the back to school season or for this season or whatever. Medical devices, oftentimes they are contingent on pivotal conferences or launches that they have, opportunities where they get their audience attention. And so time to market becomes critical for them. Others is weight. Aircraft industry and drones and others like that are really conscious of weight and dealing with that. I think the pivotal point here, Carl, is what you said early on, is that this has to be in context to a particular company or in their particular circumstance. And I think for reliability, the danger is to say, well, we always want to reduce failure rate. Well, maybe not. That may or may not be the critical thing. If your existing failure rate is susceptible to all the stakeholders, but your consumer market and time to market is pivotal, then by prioritizing the reliability improvements to reduce the risk of a delay, well, that will probably get a whole lot more attention than one that just goes after another incremental failure rate reduction.
Well, yeah, and let's explore the failure rate aspect, because a safety problem, even with a low failure rate, can be very high risk. And so we don't want to make failure rate the end-all be-all, so to speak, of considerations. It's important, but we've talked about this before in our risk podcasts. You need to look at severity, but you also need to look at likelihood.
Right.
And both of those play into it. So we don't want to, and your point's well taken, you don't want to overemphasize the failure rate at the expense of other things.
Well, another strategy is go talk to the decision makers that are ones that are allocating resources. Who's going to fund or support the recommendations? What are their priorities? We talked about all kinds of different ways of thinking through it, but at the end of the day, if you're counting on a management team to support or fund the recommendations, or a program manager or whoever, go ask them. Here's a couple of options. What's possible to be done? What are you supporting? What what would, how do you see this? It's tap into other people's experience and their point of view of the organization. You don't have to come up with the recommendations all by yourself. And I think many people miss that as a strategy. Go talk to
them. And let's say that it's probably not a good idea to come up with it all by yourself. And I completely agree, Fred, I would want to do this in collaboration with management. So you can do that different ways. The question is when you interact or how, mm-hmm. and that's specific to your circumstances, where you are on the organization chart. You may be a supervisor, you might be an engineer, but your point is well taken. You must interact with the management, make sure they have a input for two reasons, at least two reasons. One is, you want their input because they have experience. Number two is you want their support. And if you've asked them or got, if you've collaborated with them, you're more likely to get support. I'll just add one more strategy. And I use this in FMEAs and I've used it in other teams, which is I pull out the yellow stickies or the pad of post-it notes. And at the first meeting in an FMEA, we hand out these sticky notes and say to the team, please list your areas of concern within the scope of this FMEA. Mm-hmm. And they write down one concern on each sticky note. And then we put them up on the wall. And that makes sure that we've collaborated with the subject matter experts. Yes, all of those will come out in a good FMEA. But it's really fun and interesting and a good idea to do it at the outset to make sure you don't miss something. And you can do that even outside the FMEA. You can sit with your management and say, I got an FMEA coming up. Are there any areas of concern you're aware of that we should not miss?
Right. And it's amazing. I've done that a couple of times and it has two things. One is the discussion covered many or if not all of those. And if we missed any, that we could circle, we had the reminder on the wall that it didn't get lost. And that helped. In my particular circumstance, the introvert's concern was very prevalent. It was a serious one. And the group did ignored it for quite a while. And finally, we circled back to it and that person got their voice heard. And it was actually turned out to be one of the top three things we ended up go do. So it was very fruitful. And we got tons of buy-in from that person. The other thing it does is it helps the team recognize that there are things, a benefit from doing this in a collaborative brainstorm session, because we did come up with things nobody thought of. One of the detriments I've heard or people complain about FMEAs is, well, we already know all this stuff. We're not creating new knowledge. Well, I don't think that's always true.
No, it's not.
So by doing that, bringing up the concerns at the start and going, well, here's eight concerns that we came, you know, now had, remembered or invented, I don't know what's the right word, but as a group, we found these eight concerns that nobody had thought of before. And that's
I think it's
value.
Important to emphasize that the outcome of a well-run team can be much greater than the sum of its parts. Very, very often I've seen teams come up with some wonderful aha moments and synergy that is well beyond what the individual contributes. It's the back and forth interchange between people building off of one another. So that's an incredibly important point.
Yeah. So I think the strategy, the range of strategies, that's probably another book for us here, Carl, I hazard to suggest, but the idea is that it has to be tailored to that particular organization and circumstance and so on. Yes, you could come up with dozens and dozens of perfectly useful, valuable recommendations to improve a program or a project plan. There's a limited capacity, is limited resources available to implement those things. So, and we didn't touch on all of them by any means, I think, Carl. I think there's which ones are stepping stones to that enable the next step, which ones create better buy-in, which ones, and so on and so on. I think we could list quite a few. But let's open it up to our listeners. You know, what strategies or approach do you find successful as you sit down and focus in on what are the pivotal recommendations that will make a difference? How do you sort out which ones do you focus on?
Yeah, in fact, as we open that up to the listeners, I want to add one more point, which is at what level of detail should recommendations be? Like, it's one thing to say conduct an FMEA. It's another to say the four steps that you need, like, to form the team, or what team is going to do it, or what procedure do you have, or send somebody for training. So there's levels of detail of recommendations as well.
Well, you could also say we need to prioritize where to allocate resources, and then FMEA is one tool for doing that. And it could go on and on and on. Yep. It's the different levels of recommendation. That's a good point. I didn't even thought of that.
That's right. Yeah. So I'd love to hear from you. And where do they go to make their voice heard?
Yeah, it's at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. We've recently added a SpeakPipe widget to it, so you can hit the appropriate button and record up to a 90-second message to us. It's like voicemail, essentially, through the web. And we'd love to hear from you and actually use that clip in a future podcast. And there's also a contact form there, and you can find us on Google You can find us on Google, I suppose, but on LinkedIn, you can touch with us there, and our contact info and contact forms are on our about pages on Ascendo.
Fantastic.
All right. So that's, I think, a wrap for this one. I think we may have just added too many strategies there. We have to now have an episode on strategies to pick the right strategy.
We do.
This is getting all weird now. So anyway, thanks, Carl. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Thanks, Fred.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.